picking up my everything bagel with cream cheese. Despite the fact that it was almost 2 on a Sunday, my dad and I were just now getting around to eating breakfast, while he called in the terms of our scavenger hunt bet and was making me watch Rio Bravo. It's better than Blood Alley, at any rate.
Yeah,
my dad acknowledged with a grimace.
That one was probably a mistake.
I tucked my feet up underneath me. It was an overcast, cloudy day with occasional showers, which made watching the movie feel somehow much cozier. It was exactly how you should spend a rainy day, though I might have been able to do without the John Wayne aspect of it. But as I watched, I found myself getting more engrossed in the story, almost against my will. Wayne and his newly deputized deputies holed up in a jail cell as a standoff with a militia took shape, and the men, forced to be in the same room together, started telling stories and airing old grievances. At one point, the character sang a song, and then immediately after, another character sang a song, which made me wonder if they were just trying to extend the running time or if everyone in the 50s knew that this was when you were supposed to take a popcorn break. It helped that the actors were good singers, though it did stretch logic a little. If you could sing that well, would you really be in a dusty jail in Texas? Wouldn't you have been in vaudeville or something? Those guys could really sing, I said, when the singing portion of the movie appeared to be over, and everyone on screen seemed to suddenly remember that they were actually in mortal danger. My dad looked over at me from where he was lying on the couch.
Those guys?
He repeated, sounding surprised. Yeah, I said, pointing to the screen. Those two. They were good. My dad sat up and paused the movie, then turned to face me fully.
They should be able to sing, he said,
a concerned expression starting to take over his face.
That's Ricky Nelson and Dean Martin.
My dad said these names like they were supposed to be somehow significant to me, and I just nodded. And they're, good, I said, starting to regret I'd ever said anything.
Oh my God,
my dad said, shaking his head. He pointed to my phone.
Get Sabrina on the phone,
he said, in the kind of voice I'd heard him use in his DC offices. The tone that sent interns scurrying to do whatever he needed done. I said, even as I reached for my phone. Why?
Because she needs to hear about this,
he said, in a tone that absolutely didn't invite discussion. I called Bree, put the phone on speaker, and hoped she wouldn't answer. When she did, on the third ring, I took a breath to start talking immediately, but Bree beat me to it. Andy, she said, sounding happy to hear from me. Hey, I'm actually really glad you called. So here's the thing, I said, jumping in so that she would know my dad was on the line and wouldn't start talking about how hungover she was, or my plans to sleep with Clark at some point in the undefined future, or anything. I'm here with my dad. He wanted me to call you. Wait, what?
Hi, Sabrina,
my dad said, moving over to speak into my phone.
Alexander Walker here.
Hi, Mr. Walker, Bree replied politely, but I could hear the confusion in her voice.
We have a situation here. We're watching Rio Bravo.
Excellent choice, Bree said. All the confusion gone now that we were talking movies.
And my daughter apparently has never heard of Ricky Nelson or Dean Martin.
Andy, Bree said, sounding scandalized. What's the matter with you? What? I asked, looking from my dad to the phone, feeling the need to defend myself. What's the big deal? I'm sorry about this, sir, Bree said, chagrined. I'll take care of it.
I just thought you should know,
my dad said, looking at me and shaking his head.
It's a failure on my end, too, of course.
Okay, that's enough, I said, picking up my phone and taking it off speaker. It's just me now, I said to Bree as I headed out of the room.
Not too long,
my dad called after me as he picked up some papers that were stacked on the coffee table.
We're watching The Searchers after this.
Oh, that is such a great movie. Bree sighed as I closed the study door behind me and walked a few steps down the hall. Come over, I said immediately. I think we have some bagels left. No, thanks, Bree said, and I could hear the disappointment in her voice. I'm on concessions for the 5:30 show. You're working so much lately, I said. Bree didn't respond, and a moment later I felt bad for bringing it up. But more and more these days, it was getting harder to see her. She was either working at the palace or texting at the last minute that she wouldn't make the orchard or pool hangouts because she had to close up the theater. Yeah, Bree finally responded. I'm really sorry about that. Things are just kind of crazy at work. There was something in her voice that made me stand up straighter. Since Bree almost never told you what was bothering her until she was ready to, you had to learn to pick up on signals. And I had a feeling Toby would have sensed something from the very beginning of this conversation. Is everything okay? There was nothing but silence on the other end of the phone. With every second that passed, I was getting more sure that there was something going on with her, even though I had no idea what it could be. Actually, Bree started, just as my dad yelled,
Andy, are you coming?
Ignore him, I said into the phone, hoping somehow that she wouldn't have heard him. It's fine, Bree said, and her voice was brisk and composed again. I'm fine, I promise. I was just... The sentence trailed off, and when she came back on the line, her voice was much more upbeat. I'm fine, she said again. Just have to get ready for work. I'll talk to you later, okay? Before I could say anything else, she'd hung up, and I was left looking down at the contact picture that filled the screen, of Bree and Toby either arguing while on the verge of cracking up, or having their laughter interrupted by a fight. I'd long since forgotten which. I held the phone in my hand for just a minute more, wondering if she was going to call back, before giving up and returning to the study. 3 hours later, I'd finished my second John Wayne movie of the day and was feeling emotionally depleted. Man, I said, as my dad turned off the TV and reached again for the stack of papers, pulling his reading glasses out of his pocket. Didn't John Wayne ever make a comedy? A musical or two? My dad looked at me evenly over his reading glasses.
Don't make me call Sabrina again.
I withdraw the question, I said, stacking up my breakfast plates and preparing to take them into the kitchen. I watched my dad reading for a few moments, making marks on the paper with his mechanical pencil, before I asked, So, what is that? This was how I had been used to seeing my father, always working, always reading, head half buried in a stack of papers or fixated on the news. Seeing him like this again was making me realize just how long it had been since I'd seen him in work mode.
This?
He asked, looking down at the sheaf of papers in his hand, and I nodded.
It's for a case, he said, looking back down again. An old friend in the public defender's office asked me to take a look at something.
Oh, I said, leaning back against my chair, trying to figure out what this meant. My dad had not been talking at all about what he was thinking about doing with regard to his job, and for the most part, it was something I'd almost forgotten about. It was like we were both on summer vacation, and none of the real rules for either of our schedules seemed to apply anymore. This was probably made much easier by the fact my dad wasn't allowed to have any contact with his office, as it really did seem like that whole part of his life had just faded out. "Are you..." I started, then bit my lip, not sure exactly what I was trying to ask him, or what I wanted him to reply.
"I'm just looking at something for a friend," my dad said easily, seeming to understand what I was trying to get at.
After a moment, though, he set the papers aside and took off his reading glasses, turning to face me more fully.
"It is something I've been thinking about, though," he said.
He cleared his throat and rolled his pencil between his palms before he asked,
"What would you think about that, if I didn't run again in the fall?"
"What about the investigation?" I asked, thrown. As far as I'd understood things, we were still waiting for the results to come back. I hadn't known my dad not running for re-election in November was even in the cards.
"Even if it comes back in my favor," he said. "I don't know. It's just been on my mind lately."
I looked at him for a moment, then looked back down at the stack of plates once again, trying to get my thoughts together. It hadn't been that long ago that I couldn't picture my dad without his job. But now, it was getting harder to remember when things hadn't been like this, our lives overlapping. It was in the way my dad knew to make sure that the fridge was stocked with Diet Coke, the way I knew his paper reading hierarchy: national news, sports, business, comics. He was especially invested in the family hijinks of the Grants in Grant Central Station. It was how, when he'd been running late to dinner at the Crane last week, he'd called and asked me to order for him, and I'd done it without needing to ask him what he wanted. It was last Sunday, when Clark had come for dinner, and then Tom and Palmer had stopped by afterward to hang out, and we'd all ended up playing Pictionary. My dad teaming up with Tom and Clark, the three of them strategizing and taking it way too seriously. And winning, not that I was bitter. It was this, now, watching movies on a rainy Sunday and not wanting to be anywhere else.
"So if you didn't run," I said slowly, trying this idea out, "you'd be here?"
"I would."
My dad looked across at me.
"What do you think?"
I looked down at my hands for a moment, twisting them together, trying to gather my thoughts. The idea that this summer wouldn't just be over as soon as news came from Washington was something I really hadn't let myself think about before. I cleared my throat before I spoke. "It would be okay with me. If you were around, I mean."
"Good,"
my dad said, tapping his pencil once on the coffee table. "After all," I said, making my tone faux serious, "Palmer might do another scavenger hunt, and we'd need you for backup."
"Well," my dad said, matching my tone, "I wouldn't want to miss that."
He smiled at me, then settled back against the couch and picked up his papers again. I'd planned to bring the plates to the kitchen, take a shower, and get ready before Clark came over for dinner. But I found myself curling back up in the chair. I just wanted to sit there, in the quiet, with my dad working, letting myself imagine, for the first time, what October or February could look like. No train rides down to D.C., no Peter. Being able to tell someone who was actually interested, and not being paid to listen, how my day had been. And so, even though I knew I should probably get moving, that Clark was on his way over, I stayed there, perfectly still, letting myself picture it, playing it out in my head like a movie, seeing what, just maybe, could be. The rain didn't let up the next day. It just got heavier, which meant all my walks were much shorter than usual, and my car was now covered in muddy paw prints, despite my best efforts to keep the seats covered in towels. Since the shorter walks left me with unexpected time on my hands, Clark and I ended up getting lunch at the diner, and then going to the Pierce to hang out with Toby, who was, to put it mildly, not looking forward to her date that night. She'd been sending incredibly long text messages about it, and I was spending most of my time trying to figure out what she was actually trying to say with the emojis. We found ourselves walking through the Renaissance Room, listening to Toby complain about what a weird name Craig was, and wondering why Bree just wouldn't let her mourn the loss of her Wyatt crush in peace. When a group came in for the tour that Toby had forgotten she was scheduled to give, she hustled out to the front entrance, leaving me and Clark alone to wander around the museum. Which, I realized, wasn't actually the worst way to spend a rainy day. We walked around, making up backstories and names for the people in the paintings as we walked. When we reached the gallery where my mother's picture was, I knew I could have steered him away, or told him I was museumed out or something. But I didn't. I took his hand and led him to where my mom's painting was. I'd told him about it, here and there, but he'd never seen it before. And even though anyone who paid the Pierce's entrance fee could see this picture, standing next to Clark as he looked at it, I was feeling somehow exposed, like he was seeing something I usually kept to myself. "So?" I asked, keeping my voice light, like I really didn't care about the answer, even though my heart was pounding hard in my chest. "It's great," Clark said, looking at the painting for a moment longer before looking at me and squeezing my hand. "It's really wonderful, Andy. Your mom was so talented." "She was," I said, looking at the way the stars seemed to glow against the canvas, the way you could somehow feel the wind that was blowing through the trees.
"So, what are you looking at?"
"I don't know," I said. "I think there was meant to be something else there," I said, gesturing to the bare section of the canvas, the faint etchings of pencil lines that I'd spent way too long trying to make sense of. "But I don't know what it was." Clark nodded, eyes still on the painting.
"So, did you pose for this, or?"
I shook my head. I hadn't ever known where the inspiration for the painting had come from, only that my mother had started working on it late one night when she was sick, before my dad had quit the campaign and moved home again. "I don't know where it came from," I said. And as I did, I felt the hollow realization in my stomach that because I had never asked her about it when I had the chance, now I would never know.
"Because you're definitely looking at something," Clark said, almost more to himself as he leaned closer to the picture again. "Right? I mean, look at your sight line."
"I know," I said, shaking my head. "But I don't think we're ever going to know what it is."
"Well, maybe not," Clark said after a moment, his words coming slowly, like he was still putting something together. "Was this supposed to be somewhere that you know of?"
"It's the field behind our old house," I said. I had recognized it as soon as I'd seen my mother start sketching it out. You could see the top of our roof in the distance, and the remnants of the treehouse my dad had tried to build for me before he'd admitted it was outside of his capabilities, and I'd admitted that I actually hadn't wanted a treehouse.
"Why?"
"Because I have an idea," Clark said, raising his eyebrows at me.
20 minutes later, I sat in Clark's passenger seat, feeling my heart beat harder the closer we got to Eastview. When Clark had suggested going to my old house to see if we could find out anything, I'd been ready to tell him that I didn't want to go back there.
that I'd avoided it for 5 years. But I didn't tell him that. Instead, I'd found myself agreeing and giving him directions. I wasn't sure why, but I didn't want to have to hide from it any longer. And Clark seemed so convinced that we'd find our answer to what was happening in the painting that I found myself wondering if maybe this could be true. The closer we got, I found myself anticipating every turn, every landmark, even though I hadn't been down these streets in 5 years. "You'll be coming up to it on the left," I said as he signaled and turned onto our street.
"Gotcha."
The rain started to come down harder, and he increased his wiper speed. I turned to face the window, feeling like maybe I was ready to do this after all, that it probably had been ridiculous to avoid it for all these years.
"Where is it?"
Clark asked, looking out to the side of the road, then at me. I started to answer, but it got caught somewhere in my throat as I stared out through the rain-streaked window. I somehow couldn't get my brain to understand, to process what was right in front of me. I looked around, wondering if there was any way I'd taken us down the wrong street, if we'd turned too early. But even as I thought it, I knew that wasn't the case. Clark pulled to the side of the road, and I got out of the car as soon as he put it in park, not even caring about the rain, and walked across the street to the spot where the farmhouse had been. But it wasn't there. There wasn't anything there. Just the plot of land, slightly overgrown, though I was pretty sure I could still see where the foundation had once been. I was getting soaked, the rain was running down my face, and I wasn't even moving to wipe it away. So the house had been torn down. My dad had sold it, I knew that much. So maybe it had been here for a while before it was knocked down? I looked around as though I was going to get some information from the deserted street, but there wasn't anything. Just an empty space where our house, my whole world when I was a kid, had been. And now, unless you'd known, you wouldn't even stop to slow down and look at it. You would never have known anything was there at all. I waited for the devastation to come. The tears, the feeling that things were falling apart. But it didn't. I looked around through the rain at the place where our house had been, and realized that it was just a piece of land. That was all it had ever been. It was the fact that the three of us had lived there together that had made it special. But now, when I thought about home, a series of images flashed through my mind. It was my dad in the kitchen, heating me up a slice of pizza, along with one for himself. It was walking back and forth with Palmer between our two houses. It was running up and down the stairs like crazy people as we gathered scavenger hunt supplies. It was sharing a piece of cheesecake with my father. It wasn't the farmhouse. Not anymore.
"Hi."
I turned to see Clark standing next to me, raising his voice to be heard over the rain. He looked at the empty lot, then at me, his brow furrowed. And I could see just how much he was regretting this.
"Andy, I..."
"Car," I said, taking his hand and walking back across the street toward it, feeling like there wasn't any need for us to get even more soaked. I climbed into the passenger seat, and Clark got behind the wheel a few seconds later. When he shut the door, it was like someone had turned off the volume. With the rain gone, it was suddenly very quiet, and much warmer.
"I'm so sorry," Clark said immediately. "I didn't realize..."
"It's okay," I said. I gave him a half smile. "Really."
"Really?"
I nodded. "Yeah." There was just the sound of the rain. Then I said, "I always thought I didn't want to come back here.
I've been avoiding this place for 5 years. And in the end, I looked back at where the house had been once more. It would have been better to do this years ago. I was making it so much harder for myself when it didn't have to be. What Bree had said to Toby about Wyatt flashed into my head. I think it's better to face it, I said. Something passed over Clark's face, and he looked down at the steering wheel. I do wish I could have gone back inside before it got knocked down, though. Clark nodded, and I knew he probably assumed it was for sentimental reasons. I paused for only a second, listening to the rain hitting the window before telling him what I'd never told anyone. I always thought maybe my mom left something for me in there.
Like what?
I shrugged and turned my back to the empty space where the farmhouse had been. I don't even know, I said, realizing as I did that it was the truth. I'd never gotten further in my head than something left for me in the house. I just wanted some proof, beyond my mother buying out the feminine care aisle of CVS, that she'd left something for me. Something so that I could pretend, at least for a moment or two, that she was still with me. Just something. I gave it one last look, then turned to Clark. We can go now, I said, giving him a smile. I'm good. Clark squeezed my hand, then started the engine and headed back toward the center of town. I kicked off my wet flip-flops and propped my feet on the dashboard, settling in for what I knew would be at least a half-hour's journey. I looked over and saw that he was gripping the steering wheel hard, his hands flexing against it and a muscle working in his jaw, like he was struggling with something. I started to say something, then realized that maybe I should wait for him to speak. Just like he'd waited for me. I pressed my lips together and made myself sit in silence, and when I was almost sure I couldn't take it any longer, Clark cleared his throat.
I was just thinking. What you said? About how it's better to face it?
Yes, I said slowly. You can almost feel it coming. When someone needs to say something to you and you don't want to spook them. It was the same way I felt whenever I picked up Fenway, the most jittery dog I walked. Any sudden movements and he'd go skittering under the bed, seeming to forget every day that it was nothing to be scared of. Nothing but a walk. And that he was always happy once I got him out the door. Clark let out a long breath, like he was steeling himself for something. And I somehow knew that there was a reason he was telling me now. When we were driving, when he didn't have to look directly at me, when there were other things to focus on.
My dad, he said,
and I watched as his hands gripped and flexed against the wheel again before coming to rest at 10:02. I just nodded, even as I felt my breath catch in my throat. Since the first night we'd talked, I'd known there was a story there. But Clark hadn't offered up any more details, and I hadn't known how to ask about it. What about him? I asked, when Clark's silence stretched on, and I started to worry that maybe he was waiting for me to say something. Clark paused at a red light and gave me a ghost of a smile before looking back at the road.
He's never read any of my books,
Clark said, his voice quiet. I blinked, just trying to understand this for a second. How was that even possible?
He always wanted to write,
Clark went on before I could ask. And I knew right away that this wasn't a story he'd told a lot, or ever. There was no easy cadence here or practiced gloss. It felt like Clark was finding each word for the very first time.
He was doing the accountant thing to have some stability, but it was always supposed to be temporary, until his real job could begin.
I nodded, the light changed, and Clark drove on.
But he never sold anything. Never even got an agent to take him on. But since I could remember, he was working on what he considered his masterpiece, this sci-fi epic.
Sci-fi? I asked, surprised. Lark had mentioned that first night that his father was an aspiring writer, and I'd always assumed he wrote fantasy, like Clark.
Yeah, Lark said with a half-smile. He doesn't really get what I do, I don't think.
His voice trailed off and he cleared his throat.
Anyway, he was really happy when I started working on my book. I think I only did it because I saw my dad writing every night, and it became something we were doing together. The McAllister men and their books. My mom used to joke about it.
A smile flitted across his face, but was gone almost as soon as it appeared.
So, when I finished, my dad had lists of agents to send it to. I didn't think anything was going to happen. I don't think he did either. But then the book sold.
Lark hit his blinker, and I realized we were heading toward the diner. I didn't know if Clark was hungry or if he was going there out of habit, but either way was fine with me. I'd had enough driving around talks with my friends to know that sometimes you just needed somewhere to go, some destination so that you could keep the car moving and the conversation going.
He was really happy for me at first, Lark said,
and the faint trace of hopefulness still in his voice was breaking my heart. I wanted to slide across my seat and wrap my arms around him, kiss him until he had forgotten all about this, but I knew that neither one would actually be helpful right now.
And he thought that it would be good for his book, too. But my agent didn't want it, and he couldn't sell it anywhere, this book he'd been working on for 10 years. And then my books started to do well.
And he wasn't so happy, I filled in, feeling my anger at Clark's dad starting to rise.
Not so much, Clark said.
And though he was keeping his tone light, I could practically see the effort involved with it.
He used to say that he was planning on reading my books, getting around to it any day now. But we've stopped talking about it, really, and I've accepted now that he's just not going to read them.
What about your mom? Lark shrugged as he made the right onto the street that was the shortcut to the diner's parking lot.
She stays out of it mostly, he said. She keeps the peace, changes the subject if it looks like we're going to start talking about something that could be upsetting.
I nodded, trying to ignore how familiar that sounded.
It was why I moved out this year.
Lark pulled into the parking lot, which was half deserted. He swung into an open space and cut the engine, but didn't take the keys out yet. And I didn't unbuckle my seatbelt or do anything that might stop him from continuing. Was it just too hard? Lark looked over at me and gave me a sad smile.
No, he said. That's the thing. We were getting along great. But it wasn't until I realized why that I knew I had to leave.
I blinked at him, trying to figure out what this was without having to ask him. Before I could formulate the question, Clark went on quietly.
It was because I realized he was happier when I wasn't succeeding. Because we've never gotten along better than when I couldn't write.
I drew in a sharp breath as the impact of this hit me. What Clark had been going through for the last 3 years. I'm really sorry, I said. When I realized that there was nothing else I could say, what I really wanted to say about his dad might be better saved for another time.
Thanks, he said,
looking down at the steering wheel as he shrugged.
It's just hard.
We sat in silence for a moment, and then Clark said, his voice quiet,
Your dad read my books right away, because we were dating and he wanted to know more about me.
Maybe the first one, I said. But the second one was because he liked the story. Lark gave me a faint smile,
But he did it for you. I wish my dad were more like that,
he said, his voice getting softer with every word.
You're just really lucky.
I sat there, listening to the rain beat against the car windows, and realized he was right. It was something I would never have believed at the beginning of the summer. But it was true now. I couldn't imagine my dad ever stepping in my way to try to block my path, or wanting anything but for me to be happy.
I know, I said, my voice quiet.
I reached my hand over to cover his, and he threaded his fingers through mine. We just stayed like that, neither one of us making any move to get out of the car as the rain fell all around us. I rested my head on his shoulder, and he tipped his head down to rest against mine. And I sensed he was feeling what I was, that there was no need to talk just then. That what we'd said, and the rhythm of Clark's heartbeat, and the sound of the rain in that moment was enough.
Chapter 15.
Clark had started writing again. He didn't tell me right away, but I knew something was different. I'd come by to get Birdie, and he wouldn't be there to greet me. Birdie already wrangled into his leash. He'd emerge a few minutes later, a faraway look in his eye, his mind clearly on other things, and he'd head out to the walk, forgetting essential things. His keys, his sunglasses, the dog. He always seemed to be typing things into his phone or scribbling things down on scraps of paper. When I finally asked him if he was writing, as carefully as possible, since I didn't know the rules of writer's block and whether you could call it back by saying its name, Beetlejuice style, he told me that he was. He seemed thrilled, but wary, not wanting to tell anyone any details about it, something that was driving Tom bananas. But maybe he needed to say out loud that he had an idea and it was worth exploring, because after that, Clark dropped the pretense and started to work for real. This meant that while he sometimes would take a break to walk Birdie with me, mostly when I picked up the dog now, I would come into the dining room where he'd set up his office and give him a quick kiss, but wouldn't even stop to talk. I knew the idea had real potential when he let his publisher know he was writing. Apparently, she'd called when he was working and didn't have his defenses up. And she was thrilled. He'd told me one night, when we were all hanging out by the pool, that he'd even agreed to a reading and book signing in New Jersey in a few weeks, and had asked if I'd go with him.
I haven't done a bookstore event for years, because the first question you always get is about the new book and what it's about.
But you can answer that now, I said, giving him a smile that I hoped looked sweet and innocent. Like, what would you say exactly if someone asked you now? Clark shot me a look, and I protested. Tom wants to know too, you know. He promised me $20 if I can get you to tell me the plot.
Andy,
Tom called from where he was sitting with Palmer on the side of the pool.
Remind me to tell you the definition of the word secret one of these days.
Despite our best efforts, including my dad at dinner, Clark hadn't given up any real details. Though from the few comments he'd made, I was pretty sure that the new book was about Tamsin's ne'er-do-well older brother, Jack. But I was beginning to understand just how spoiled I'd been, having a boyfriend with no job and no responsibilities. One who was usually happy to walk dogs with me or hang out all day. Now I had a boyfriend who spent most of his time working feverishly on a new book, his hands flying over his laptop keyboard, like if he didn't get the words down, they might disappear and not come back again. I was glad that he was working, mostly because he was so happy about it. relieved and terrified and excited all at the same time. But it did mean my summer of Clark having nothing but time on his hands was over. Since he'd started working some nights, we'd been scheduling our dates. And there was one date in particular that we'd both blocked off. It was this coming Saturday, and I'd marked the date off in my phone with no subject, just a series of exclamation points. It was the night that we'd decided we were going to take things to the next level. It had been my decision, while Clark let me know in no uncertain terms that he was more than okay with this. I didn't feel any pressure from him. This was what I wanted. And now that we had a date marked off, I wasn't so much scared as I was really excited. Since I knew that if I had nothing to do all day, I would just obsess about what was going to happen that night, I'd packed my schedule full. I had early morning walks, and then Toby and I were going to Mystic Pizza for lunch. We'd all slept over at Breeze the week before and had a Julia Roberts rom-com fest. And when I'd found out that it was an actual pizza place just an hour outside Stanwich, I'd made plans to go immediately. Toby was equally insistent on going, though I suspected mainly because she wanted the t-shirt. Bree and Palmer were busy, so it was just the two of us on a mini road trip. That would take up most of the day. So hopefully I'd be able to go home and get ready and not have too much time to let my thoughts run away with me. Clark had planned a date for us, but he wouldn't tell me what it was, just that it was a surprise, and I'd made him swear to it, didn't involve either mountains or bikes. Dad.
Hey, hon. Make sure to get some gas on your way home from Clark's. I don't want you to run out on the way to Mystic.
Me. Sure. But what do you mean, Clark's? I'm at Palmer's. We're watching educational television. Dad.
Don't make me GPS the car again.
Me. Gas. Sure. Clark says hi. Dad.
Get me a summary of his new book and all is forgiven.
Me. I'll see what I can do. Clark says if you promise no Secret Service agents, he'll think about it. Dad.
Tell him he's got a deal.
Hey, I called on Saturday afternoon as I kicked off my flip-flops in the entryway and dropped my bag by the door. I glanced at my phone, then picked up my pace. I just needed to take a quick shower. One of my dogs today had been Rosie, who always insisted on sitting on my lap and putting her head out the window while I drove, which meant I was pretty much covered in dog hair and drool. The last thing I wanted before going to eat lunch, especially because I had a feeling Toby would be making comments about it the whole drive up to Mystic. "I'm home," I called as I headed into the kitchen. My dad's car was in the garage, so I assumed that he was either in the kitchen or in his study. Okay, I looked into bringing you back pizza, and I'm just not sure... The rest of my sentence died halfway to my lips. Peter was standing in our kitchen, leaning against the counter, a mug in his hand, looking like he'd never left.
Andy,
he said, looking over and smiling at me, which was almost as off-putting as seeing him there in the first place.
How are you?
Fine, I said, looking from Peter to my dad, who was standing across the kitchen from him, trying to figure out what was happening. My dad wasn't wearing what had become his summer uniform of jeans and a t-shirt. He'd grown particularly fond of the Captain Pizza one we'd gotten on the scavenger hunt. He was wearing a crisp button-down and khakis, and his hair was sharply parted. It was like the father I'd spent the summer with was gone, and the one who was usually there had just come back. How are you?
Oh, can't complain, Peter said,
and I noticed that his BlackBerry was put away, both hands around his mug, like he was giving my father his undivided attention, which worried me more than anything else.
"Peter dropped by so we could talk over some things,"
my dad said, and I noticed Peter look from me to my dad, surprised, and a second later I realized why. My dad never would have explained any of this to me before. I wouldn't have been in the need-to-know loop.
"Come on, Alex,"
Peter said.
"Way to bury the lead.
I came here because the results of the internal investigation are going to be announced after the summer recess, and it came down in our favor. Your father is going to be cleared of all suspicion of wrongdoing."
"Oh," I said, my eyes darting to my dad, who gave me a smile. "That's good."
"Good?"
Peter echoed, shaking his head.
"It's great. It's what we expected to happen, naturally,"
he added after a moment, his tone growing more serious. He looked over at my dad.
"Marshall and Stewart are fired, of course. How they ever thought they could get away with something like this."
My dad's phone rang on the counter, and I looked over at it, almost surprised to hear the sound again. I watched it light up and then fall silent again. A second later, the ringing started up again, and my dad picked it up and switched it to silent.
"Not a good idea,"
Peter said, shaking his head.
"All the donors are going to come back around. Best not to alienate them." "Pete,"
my dad said, shaking his head.
"It's just a lot to take in. No time for hesitating. You know that better than anyone. This will be officially announced after the recess, and before it is, we've got to get back in work mode. I'm sure you're more than ready to get back to real life,"
he said, glancing around the kitchen, clearly unimpressed.
"We should talk about this speech."
I just stared at my dad, who was nodding and taking his mechanical pencil from his shirt pocket. "What speech?" My dad was already reaching to take the paper that Peter was holding out for him, and I took a step back so I wouldn't be in the way.
"Erickson wants me to headline an event with him in 2 weeks,"
he said, flicking his pencil twice and frowning down at the paper. "The governor of New York, Erickson?" I asked, and my dad nodded. "But I thought he hated you."
"Nobody hates anyone for too long in this game,"
Peter said, glancing up from his screen for just a second before looking back again.
"Nobody can afford it. And Erickson can't look like he's alienating powerful congressmen before an election."
"But," I said, still trying to figure out what was happening. "I thought... Are you going to run again?" My dad looked at me, just as Peter said.
"Of course he is. We have to do some polling, test the waters, but after the official announcement, there's no reason to delay."
He looked up at my dad.
"Alex, I think we might actually be able to come out of this stronger. You took responsibility, even though you weren't at fault, and stepped aside for the greater good. And now you're coming back, vindicated."
He smiled wide, which I only ever saw him do on election night.
"This is the kind of stuff that's going to set us up nicely on the national stage."
He paused, then started typing into his phone rapidly, like he'd been away from it as long as he was able. "But," I said, remembering the conversation we'd had in his study. "Was that just over? Totally forgotten about? Knocked down like our old house?"
"So we should get to work,"
Peter said, heading out of the kitchen.
"Alex, I'll just get us set up in your office. We have the speechwriters on a conference call in 10.
"Speechwriters?" I echoed, feeling like things were happening too quickly.
"You have to get in front of these stories," Peter said, probably to me, even though he was speaking to his BlackBerry screen. "Otherwise, you lose your ability to shape the narrative. I'll meet you in there."
He headed down the hall to the study,
eyes still on his screen.
So, I started. I wanted to ask my dad about the movie day we'd had planned for tomorrow. My revenge for when he'd turned last Sunday into a Dean Martin fest, including the original Ocean's 11. Since it was my pick, I'd gone with the newer one, mostly just to see his reaction when it started playing. But I knew it wasn't just about movie night. I wanted to know what this actually meant.
You know how Peter can get,
my dad said, looking up at me for a second before frowning down at the paper again.
He showed up here today and is already going full steam.
Right, I said. I tried to tell myself that nothing had really changed yet, that things were still okay. I need to go pick up Toby, so I should probably get going.
Great,
he said, eyes still on the paper.
I'll see you around later. I assume you're out with your friends tonight?
He didn't wait for my response before heading into the other room.
Not too late, okay?
A moment later, I could hear him talking to Peter, and the sound of CNN's theme music. The TV in his office, which we'd mostly used to watch John Wayne fighting bad guys, was now back to what it usually was doing, keeping him plugged into everything that was happening in Washington. I stood alone in the kitchen for a moment, trying to get my bearings, telling myself I shouldn't be surprised. Not really. But even as I tried to believe this, it didn't change that I felt like someone had just pulled the rug out from under me. And then, for good measure, the floor. My phone buzzed, and I pulled it out of my pocket. Toby. Shocked face, shocked face, shocked face. Worried face, worried face. Thought balloon, pizza. Girl with crossed arms, thumbs down, no entry sign. Rainbow, Milky Way, shooting star. Watch. Hourglass, hourglass. Clock. White rabbit, white rabbit, white rabbit. Nervous face. I looked down at this, shaking my head. The end of this emoji bet could not come fast enough as far as I was concerned. Me. We can't have pizza because you forgot you had to work? Toby. Bullseye. Crying face. It wasn't a big deal. It was the kind of thing that happened all the time. But I could have used the drive up to Mystic to clear my head and talk through what was happening. Me. It's okay. We'll do it another time. I closed out of Toby's text and pressed the button to call Clark. If I couldn't talk to Toby, maybe I could talk to him. Not that he would be able to do anything, but talking it through might help. I wanted to hear his voice, but my call went right to voicemail, and I realized he probably had it turned off because he was working. Because he had a job. One that he would also be going back to once the summer ended. Just like my dad was going to do. In just a few weeks, when everything was going to change. I could feel myself start to get the panicky, spiraling feeling I hadn't had since the start of summer. I had thrown out my plans and my schedule, and had just been going with the flow all summer, taking Palmer's advice and not thinking about the future. But that hadn't meant the future had gone away. I'd just been ignoring it. I hadn't considered the fact that everyone else was treating this summer as temporary. It was like I was just now realizing that I'd spent the last few months in a bubble, thinking it was real life. But it wasn't. And I never should have let myself forget that. When my phone rang a second later, I tried not to be disappointed that Maya was coming up on the caller ID. It wasn't like Clark was psychic, after all, able to know when I'd needed to talk to him the most. Hey, Maya. Andy! She said, and I could hear the stress in her voice. But I wasn't that surprised, If nothing was wrong, or if there was a scheduling change, she would have texted me.
Hi! Quick question, are you busy this afternoon? Around 1?
No, I said automatically, since I'd cleared the afternoon to eat pizza in Mystic, which was now very much not happening. Need me to do a walk?
Well, kind of,
Maya said after a pause, which should have been my first clue that something was up.
I did a drop-off at a vet, but can't make the pickup and was wondering if you could do it.
Oh, I said. Sure, which dog is it?
It's actually a cat, Maya said,
and I could hear how hard she was trying to make this sound fun and exciting, but not even coming close to pulling it off.
Oh, no, I said, since I had a feeling I knew exactly which cat we were talking about. Is this Miss Cupcakes?
Oh, you know her? Maya asked, and I could hear the relief in her voice.
Thank goodness! So you know what you're in for.
I tried to get myself to think fast, wishing I hadn't so definitively told Maya that I was free. But before I could come up with anything, she was pointing out that the hard part of the job was already done, since she'd had to corral the cat and get her into the carrier, and all I'd have to do was pick her up and bring her home. It was so logical, I really couldn't argue with it. And since I had nothing else to do that afternoon, I'd agreed. And it truthfully wasn't that bad, picking Miss Cupcakes up. The strangest thing, I realized as I brought her carrier into the kitchen, was being in Bree's house without anyone else there. I pushed open Bree's front door and stepped inside, holding in front of me, at arm's length, Miss Cupcakes' carrier, which contained a very angry Miss Cupcakes.
"Look, you're home," I said, setting the carrier on the ground while trying to keep my hands away from the air holes,
which I'd learned the hard way Miss Cupcakes was very skilled at getting her claws through.
"Okay? Stop being such a jerk."
As though the terrible cat could understand me, she started yowling, the carrier rocking back and forth. I reached over to unlatch the door, keeping the rest of me as far away from it as possible. And once it was open, took a huge step back. The cat shot out of the carrier, hissing, and disappeared into the kitchen. I let out a breath, thinking for the umpteenth time that day just how much I preferred dogs. I'd texted Bree earlier to see if she was going to be around, but hadn't gotten a response back, which made sense, since she'd told me she had plans. Even though I'd been in her house more times than I could count, being there alone was making me feel like an intruder. I closed the latch on the empty carrier, then wrote a quick note to go along with the letter from the vet that they'd given me when I'd picked her up. I started to head toward the front door when I heard a sound from upstairs.
"Hello?"
I called, figuring one of the Chowdhrees was home after all.
"I have your cat,"
I called, then a second later realized it made me sound like I'd kidnapped Miss Cupcakes and was demanding a ransom.
"She's fine,"
I added, when I didn't get a response. I waited, ears straining, but didn't hear anything, and tried to tell myself that it might have been my imagination, or the house settling or something. I had just reached for the doorknob when I heard it again, the sound of low laughter and footsteps coming down the stairs. I looked around, trying to decide if I should stay or make a run for it, when I heard someone say,
"Well, of course you do."
And I realized it was Bree. I started to walk toward the front stairs, figuring I'd meet her halfway, when I heard someone else. I just assumed Bree was on the phone, and it took me a second to recognize the voice. It wasn't until I saw them on the stairway together, pressed up against the wall, arms around each other, kissing, that I even began to get what was happening.
and even then I somehow couldn't get my brain to understand what I was seeing, though it was right in front of me. Because Bree